Amber, one of the great mysteries and treasures of the world. And one of the largest deposits of the stuff is right here in the Baltic Sea. So we are in the Kaliningrad region, trying to learn all that we can about this Baltic gold.
Eduard Michko is a geologist and paleontologist. Amber is important to his work, and he's the perfect person to give us some perspective.
Hey, Eduard.
Oh, man.
Good to see you. I see you found some amber. Let's get right to it. Scientists disagree as to what exactly it is. Is it a stone? Is it a gem? Is it resin? What is amber exactly?
Yes, amber. A good question. From a geological point of view, you can't call amber a mineral olivine or a stone. It's an organic substance, fossilized resin. From a chemical point of view, it's an amorphous frame polymer. It's composed of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, like most organic substances on Earth. They can also contain impurities like sulfur and other elements. So what is amber? It's fossilized resin. Fossilized resin from ancient plants. The ancient Greeks knew that amber had organic origins and is resin from plants. Tacitus, when he wrote about the Esti, a Baltic tribe that lived in the 1st century AD, said they collected fossilized resin which contained remnants of plants. That was back in ancient Greece. And in the 18th century, Carl Linnaeus and our great Mikhail Lomonosov almost simultaneously determined that amber is organic in nature and comes from plants. Amber isn't only found in the Leningrad region. It's just that there's a lot here. I'll tell you why a little later. Amber can be found in many places around the world, mostly in the Northern Hemisphere. Dominican amber is very famous, as well as amber from Burma, known as burmite. There's also a lot of amber in the far north, in the polar regions, in the Taimyr Peninsula, on Sakhalin, near Lake Baikal. There's amber in Europe in three places, in and around Kaliningrad, Poland, Ukraine's Rovno region, and in Germany's Saxony. This amber is all roughly the same age, but it's very important that the amber throughout the world is of different geological ages. In some places there is geologically young amber, and in others it's more ancient. But many geologists only consider succinite to be true amber. Different types of amber have different names. This is called succinite. It exists here, in Leningrad, in Rovno, and in Germany. All the rest found in various parts of the world are called amber-like resins. They differ in their physical and chemical properties. They're less dense, less viscous, and rarely used to make jewelry. What's good about our amber, our succinite, is that it's actively used in jewelry making. An interesting question is how amber formed and when that happened.
Scientists have different ways of measuring the age of amber. So what is the oldest known sample that we have available to us?
Well, of course, it's not as old as our planet. As we know from the oldest rocks, the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. Our planet was formed around 4 to 6 billion years ago, as well as the Moon in the planet system. Of course, amber is very young compared to the Earth. Our amber, like the piece in my hand, is around 37 million years old. It's geologically young. But there's more ancient amber. For example, in Burma or Myanmar, it's about 100 million years old, from the Cretaceous period. Ours is from the Paleogene period. There's amber called copal. It's very young, a few thousand years old. You can find it in Japan and Southeast Asia. And in the southern hemisphere, you can find copal in Argentina. And it's just a few thousand years old. But how do we know the age? If we look at this deposit, it's a marine deposit from an ancient sea. It's the same age as this amber. You can find amber in them, but to a lesser degree. They were formed in a sea, but not the Baltic Sea. The Baltic Sea is geologically young. It's 10 to 12,000 years old. It was formed in a glacial lake that was where the Baltic Sea is now, that came from a melting glacier about 20,000 years ago. But before that, this land was dry. And under these calm, marine, shallow water conditions, the silt, clay, and sand deposits formed what we see here, and to 2 to 3 meters under us. There's a different kind of deposit called blue earth or blue ground. And amber is highly concentrated precisely in this blue earth. All amber reserves can be found in blue earth. Why do we find amber here on the coast? Because this blue earth extends out about 10 meters from the sea bottom. It's there, and the sea washes it out, and the amber is lighter than water. It's light, so it ends up on the beach, and we collect it.
So, about the age of amber, you've talked about that, but how long does it take for the resin to actually become amber itself?
That's very complicated, because these are marine deposits, but amber formed on land comes from trees. There are many hypotheses about this. One of the theories is that there was a shallow water sea here, and there, where there's land, a river flowed 37 million years ago. It was called Eridanus, and there were forests growing throughout all of this area that produced this resin. The resin fell into the river, and here, where we are, was its mouth, where it flowed into a lagoon, and all that amber from the river accumulated in this marine sediment. But the basis of the chemical-physical transformation of resin into amber is complex, and it's still not completely clear how, because it's not known how long it spent in the soil, or if it fell directly into the river, or if it lay in the ground and was then washed into it. Because modern amber, like quaternary amber, copal that's been dug up is very brittle. Like typical resin, it's not sticky, but very brittle. But our succinite has very interesting properties. It's very hard with a high melting point. It can be found in different colors and so on. That's all connected to its origin, because we still don't understand what kind of tree produced amber. For example, Japanese amber was produced by leguminous trees. But exactly what kind, we don't know. Currently, the main scientific research points to pine trees, because we find pine twigs in the amber, and the Japanese umbrella pine, that's also a coniferous tree, that still grows today. So, it's not really clear. But I think research will eventually show us.
What about this place itself? I know you've already mentioned that there are other places around the world where amber is available and you can find it. But it is often said that here in the Baltic, it's the best quality amber. Why the Baltic? Why here?
Well, 37 million years ago, there were completely different conditions. Now it's cold, but then there were subtropical conditions. It was quite warm. Why? The continents were in about the same place as now, but with Antarctica we had a continental drift. Antarctica was connected to Australia. There was no Antarctic circumpolar current. There was no ice cap on the Arctic and Antarctica. And there wasn't a temperate climate here. How do we know it was warm? Because succiniferous deposits have accumulated fossils from life forms that liked heat and that don't live in the Baltics anymore. This deposit is called Zemlya Kranta. There are a lot that have accumulated. If you search, you will find some. Look, our first find. It's an oyster shell, Ostrea ventilabrum, a heat-loving animal. There are no oysters in the Baltic now. We don't really have sea conches or mussels, but completely different animals live here on the seabed. Look. A fossil of a sea urchin.
You can see it, yeah. Right here. Okay. So, how do they get here? I mean, we know that for a paleontologist like yourself, amber is a very rich material for you to find history and to learn about our past. And what has been the coolest thing that you've been able to find?
Well, actually, it's not only fossils we find in amber-bearing deposits, but in the amber itself, there are fossil inclusions. That's very interesting, because if the fossil loses its structure, the inclusions preserve the tiniest details, like insect hairs. From a paleontological point of view, that's a treasure trove, a trove of new knowledge about the ancient amber forest that existed here 37 million years ago. Well, I won't speak for myself, but about the rare finds you can come across. For example, lizards have been found in Baltic amber, geckos, camel spiders that live in warm regions. The majority of animals we find in amber are arthropods, small animals that fell into a resin trap. They couldn't get out and just remained there. But it's rare to find bigger animals, because bigger animals can escape from the resin. We very rarely find fleas, because fleas are mammal parasites and they can jump very quickly. Not so long ago, a hare was found from a mammal we'd never come across. Well, for example, in Dominican amber, which is more ancient, there was a famous dinosaur find, the head of a small bird-like dinosaur.
All right, I have to ask, a lot of people have seen the movie Jurassic Park and are fascinated by the idea. In fact, when I'm telling people about amber, this is the first thing they ask me. Is this something that scientists are working on to be able to extract DNA and maybe revive dinosaurs or something along those lines?
That's a good question. Actually, if you look at the inclusions in the amber, you can see fine details, ants, mosquitoes. But it turns out, since it's a polymeric substance, diffusion takes place, and what we see isn't the animal itself. It's a sort of animal imprint, like a 3D shadow of the animal itself. And there's practically no biological content there. Deoxyribonucleic acid has a quite complicated structure. It decomposes quite quickly, over about 500 years or so. They conducted some experiments. They took resin, today's resin. They put insects in it, buried it, and tried to sequence the DNA. About 5 years went by, but there were no results showing that we could completely recreate DNA. And that was only after 5 years, and we're talking millions of years. Unfortunately, amber is a poor trap for such organic structures when it comes to DNA. So Jurassic Park may be a great and beautiful fairy tale, but unfortunately, it is just a fairy tale.
What about the clarity? You have very different levels of color. Sometimes it's milky, sometimes it's even blue is one of the rare colors. What gives amber its specific color, and why is there such a wide range?
There's milky amber, transparent amber. It can be light blue or a greenish color. All this depends on the amber's chemical composition. There are many aspects to consider. It depends on the kinds of impurity, the amount of fracturing. The more fracturing, the less transparent. When there are few fractures, it can be highly transparent. When there are a lot of fractures, it's more opaque. The most highly valued amber is milky amber, because it's stronger. It's the most commonly used in jewelry making. There's also a rotten amber, which is very fragile. But that's all connected to its physical chemical properties. But the chemical formula itself is always about the same. C14H16O4. But there could be an inclusion of different elements.
What about the physical characteristics? I mean, amber can float. It's not particularly dense. It actually burns if you try and set it on fire. It can melt. What are some of the other characteristics of amber, and why is it this way?
Well, amber has a lot of interesting properties. Probably the most interesting is its luminescence. If we were to come here at night with an ultraviolet light and turn it on, we'd see how it glows in different colors: milky, green, transparent, luminous light blue. That's also caused by that organic lattice that reacts to the ultraviolet light.
Edward, I have to ask, I'm fascinated by your tattoos. I know that you love what you do, and it shows in our conversation. But your tattoos, are they amber related as well, or are these just random creatures that you've adorned yourself with?
No.
A fun question. I'm a paleontologist. I conduct research in various areas, not only these amber-bearing deposits. My PhD dissertation was on trilobites, extinct marine arthropods. Now, to become a full professor, I'm working on a paper that's also on ancient arthropods. So, these are the kinds of species I've written about. So, that's my style, I guess.
Here at the Amber Museum in Kaliningrad, they have one of the world's largest collections of the precious stone. Irina Krivanos is the exhibition curator here, and I bet she has some stories to tell. Irina, thanks for taking the time to meet us here. This is such a beautiful collection. I want to ask, what has amber meant to humanity throughout the years?
There's a lot to take in here, because amber has great significance for me. We don't know exactly why it was considered magical 4,000 years ago, but it seems it was magical. At the beginning of the AD period, the amber trade was booming. It was connected with the Romans, who considered amber to be a magical stone because of a Greek legend. The amber trade greatly affected the economic life of Europe during that period, even though it started here, when the Aesti lived on this land. Later, amber became one of the most important materials traded between the Hanseatic League and the Teutonic Order. Then a diplomatic gift, a gemstone, and a medicine for half or majority of diseases. Now it makes fantastic jewelry, and in principle, we can find amber throughout human history.
So, Ira, I know that there are a lot of legends surrounding amber. What is your favorite?
Probably my favorite one describes the attitude of people in ancient Rome towards amber, which has had an influence on many of us. It's the story of Phaethon, who suspected that he was the son of Helios, the sun god. He asked to drive his father's chariot with its fiery horses, but couldn't cope and was killed. And now, according to the legend, amber is resin and also the tears of the daughters of the sun god. So this shows the attitude of the Romans towards amber. It's the stone that lights the way in the afterlife.
Well, there's a legend that Stradivarius violins were even coated with a powder of amber. What other uses are there for this stone?
It's been used for many different things. Anything from diplomatic gifts to amber lenses, for measuring the density of beer, and at some point, it was discovered that amber improves circulation and can be used for blood transfusions. In the 17th century, or even earlier, many medicines contained amber. It was actually thought that amber was a cure for the plague, although that may have been a legend started by amber catchers who spent a lot of time in water, so they had better hygiene. Nonetheless, doctors treating the plague took amber with them and put it in the beaked masks. It was thought that amber, or a unicorn horn, which was actually ivory, could detect poison in foods or drinks, too. Both things were quite readily available, but they still thought it had these powers. There was a belief that amber powder or oils were very useful for treating diseases. But to find out which diseases exactly, you'd have to collect prescriptions from all over Europe. For example, there's one prescription from the Pope from the 13th century.
So how does amber make its way from the mines in its natural state to jewelry and museum showcases? We were able to get access to the Amber Combinat, a unique entity which handles the whole process. Oleg, thank you very much for taking the time to bring us out here and see how this all goes down. I have to ask, this deposit is about 50 million years old. My understanding is to get something that old, you have to go really, really deep, maybe even down to the core. Or does the amber just kind of find its way up to the surface? Talk to me about that process.
Yes, a very valid question. We're now located at the site of the biggest amber deposit on the planet. To get to the layer with amber-bearing clay, we have to remove 50 to 60 meters of waste earth. That's what most of our people work on. So we do 10 times more work removing waste to get to the blue earth. This site has been in operation since the 1970s. They've extracted 10,000 tons of amber here, and there's thought to be 100,000 left. So, you and I surely won't live to see it all removed.
So, talk to me about the whole process. So, you dig, you find, you process. Talk to me, how do you find amber?
Well, any mining operation begins with geological exploration. The geologists search for the amber, dig a borehole, do tests, and determine the contours of the deposit and its volume. After that, we bring in the miners, who will already know approximately at what depth we will find amber deposits, how much there will be, and we can already make some preliminary calculations and look at the economics. As far as the equipment is concerned, we remove 50 meters using various machines. We remove the first 25 meters with small excavators and trucks, which take all the waste earth from the developed space in the pit. We remove the lower layers, where you can find water that hinders vehicle movement, with dragline excavators, which you can see over there, that aren't affected by water at all. One bucket load can remove about 20 tons of waste earth. That's what it's doing now. And when this excavator finishes its work, we will finally reach the top of the blue earth, the 5 meter deep layer of blue earth, which contains the amber. We need to lift this layer with the help of the excavator and soak it with a powerful stream of seawater. After that, the slurry made up of sand, clay, and seawater, as well as the amber itself, goes to our processing plant for separation and sorting.
Very cool. Now, when I think of amber, I think of small pieces with inclusions in them. What is the biggest piece of amber or the most exciting thing that you found here?
I won't say about this site, but in general. It's been established that a piece of amber weighing 12 kilograms was found on the Baltic coast in the 19th century. That's a very rare example. I would say it probably wasn't of the best quality, because the bigger the piece of amber, the more likely it is to have flaws. As far as this site is concerned, a few years ago we found a piece weighing more than 3 kilograms. It's now in the site's Amber Museum, where anyone who wants to see it can.
With a variety of shapes and large color palette, amber has always been an inspiring medium for many artists. Zhanna Lopatkina's family has been looking at giving amber a new perspective while also preserving centuries of tradition.
Zhanna, it's always interesting to come into an artist's workshop to see where everything happens, so thank you for the opportunity. I know that amber is quite fragile to work with. Is this an asset or is this something that harms you when you're working with it?
I was raised here in Kaliningrad, and I've been coming to the coast and collecting amber since I was a child. It was very exciting. I knew it was light and fragile even back then. You simply fall in love with this material, and little by little, you learn to work with it. You accept its fragility. I have a project. Here, touch it. I worked on the edge here, snipping off pieces, so I played around with its fragility and it turned out like this. So there are advantages too.
How do you select a piece of amber to work with?
I use two methods. I lay out the amber, I buy it at the mill, then we cut it into these slabs and sort them by size. There are two options, basically. Do something with what you have or come up with an idea by carefully selecting each piece. You can go through everything there and then find none of it works for you. So even if you have a ton of amber, your idea might not fit. It's a very long process, but in any case, you have to find the right piece.
Now, I know that some artists actually color the amber in some way. Do you color your amber specifically for a piece of work, or do you like to use the natural color that exists?
I only like to use natural amber, just natural colors, without any chemicals or physical coloring, because it's great as it is. You can choose a piece of amber to work on, but with time, its color will change. It's very interesting, and how you execute your work will impact the color over time, and how it might look later. It depends on the artist's skill.
I wanted to ask about that. Does amber actually change over time, not just the color, but the texture of the amber as well?
Its shape. Yes, it's white amber, for example. The oil evaporates little by little, and this changes its structure a bit. But these are little things that only a craftsman will notice. But the color of this kind of amber will change year by year. If you have a piece like this, you can take a picture of it every year, and every year you'll see a different color. It's very interesting. So if we take amber of this usual golden color, it will start darkening 20 or 30 years later. So that's quite a long time. But it will only become more valuable with time. Its value will increase with that color, and it's interesting. My favorite amber is black amber. I don't think it's very well-known color for amber. It has an interesting peculiarity in that it does the opposite over time. It becomes slightly golden. Every year, it's like a drop of gold is added. It's very interesting to observe.
Very cool. Now, you've touched on this a little bit before, but I see that you have a sketch over here. When you are working with amber, do you sketch out your ideas and then follow that pattern, or does the amber speak to you to give you an idea of what you're working on?
No, I've learned how to make the stone work for me. You plan the work and already know which stone to work with.
May I ask what you're working on right now?
I'm doing this. Not long ago, they discovered a hoard of valuables from 1300 BC in Cyprus and found pieces of amber. So people have been extracting this amber for all that time, going into the sea and collecting it. And my project is called the Amber Catcher. Unfortunately, people die collecting this amber. Even now, young people who haven't really mastered scuba diving also die. And so this idea came to me, the Amber Catcher. Whether it's a realistic person or some kind of human form or skull, and so I'm doing this kind of work now. And these are already finished forms, practically ready to be worked on. So these are the shapes.
It's also interesting. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Спасибо.